Part 5, Chapter 1, Faith, Hope and Love. In the development of a transfiguristic school, progress begins by means of a fundamental radiation of the gnosis. This radiation is to be found everywhere in the world. There is no place where it is not present. While it is world, embracing it emanates from the magnetic body of a brotherhood which entered into liberation in the centuries that lie behind us, and which radiates its glory into the dialectical life field in full splendor. It is of extraordinary significance to dialectical mankind that the universal Gnostic light is transmuted by means of such a brotherhood, for if this were not the case, the fundamental radiation could not be intercepted by the night dwellers. Due to the presence of the fundamental Gnostic radiation, the work of a spiritual school can begin. The school knows how to make a link with it by means of group unity and directedness of purpose. By bringing this radiation into rotation, a force field will come into being around the working field of the school. Then the fundamental radiation, which vibration is entirely attuned to the force field and the group, will finally divide into 7 rays. This division of the force field into 7 rays is called the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. This means that the 7 powers manifest themselves in all those who live in the force field. Due to this, the force field truly becomes a life field. It forms itself into a light field, into a magnetic sphere, into a new earth. All those who are connected with it will change fundamentally, structurally, they will transfigure. This new development takes place very gradually, very methodically, and entirely harmoniously. But notwithstanding all this, it takes place with an irresistible tempo. Whoever are willing to live with us in the magnetic field of the school should take into account that they will be taken along in that tempo, either to a resurrection, or, in the case of those who prove to be recalcitrant, to a fall. When this great renovation process starts, a journey for all those who are separated into the new field begins, while the remainder of mankind stays behind in the ordinary magnetic body of nature. A change sets in, and throughout the ages this change has been described as a journey. So there is question of a farewell. The two groups drift apart. The night dwellers stay behind. Those who seek the new morning are going away on a journey. The change of those who separate will at a given moment have progressed so drastically that both worlds disappear from each other's sight. Long before this disappearance, a moment has arrived when beings from the old world order will no longer be able to step over into the new order. The distance has then become too great, the difference too drastic. It is self-evident that the spiritual school should exert itself to the utmost to make this transfer happen to the greatest number of seekers for as long as possible. This is the classical task of the ferryman who has to lead all the pilgrims across the Styx, the separating river. In due course, this work will take place exclusively on the basis of the new fundamental radiation emanating from the modern spiritual school. We just said that the radiation was particularized in this nature by the preceding brotherhood, who has already been liberated. Since the 20th of August 1953, the radiation of the fundamental Gnostic light has been taken over by the modern spiritual school, and the 7 rays of the Holy Spirit manifest themselves in that field. That is why we said that the work of the ferryman, the harvesting of as many souls as possible out of the sea of life, will take place exclusively on the basis of the new fundamental radiation, which calls and awakens all over the world. This activity will have to be supported as soon as possible by the workers who do the work through the sevenfold spirit. The work of the school still takes place for a great part through the fire of the prophetic word, driven only by the link of faith with the Gnosis. But presently this work will be done by the fulfilling new life itself that has touched the workers concerned. They will then say to all those who are still in the field of the night, "Behold, I am still with you," but the time will come soon that this will no longer be the case. Now the Ark, the new magnetic body of the school, is still with you, and if so desired, you can fulfill the conditions and enter. But if, seen from the point of space and time, the separation between you and us is becoming unbridgeable, that entry will not be possible anymore. The Gnosis will close the door of the Ark. This introduction was necessary to show how essential it is to give these things publicity, for the Hora Est has sounded more emphatically than ever before. Since the 20th of August 1953, the force field, the magnetic body of the school, has been engaged in revealing itself in seven faculties, in seven rays. The Holy Spirit pours itself out over us, and two rays of the sevenfold spirit are clearly recognizable, the ray of the faculty and the ray of the light field of God. Therefore, there is enough time for us to reflect and to adapt ourselves. The development of salvation must find us all ready and prepared for the farewell. That is, for the time being, the main goal, and, in this respect, all the pupils have to solve a great psychological conflict within themselves. We have just discussed the farewell, the moment that the new body of the school and the magnetic field of ordinary nature have drifted so far apart that a link is no longer possible. At that moment, the natural scientific farewell is celebrated, but there is still another farewell, the farewell to the world for each pupil who enters the heavenly ship, the magnetic body of the school. The pupil should know from within that such a farewell is a demand, an absolute necessity. Yet he should realize that it is easy to fulfill. It is out of the question that the modern spiritual school should demand something from you that you could not fulfill, or that you could fulfill only with much difficulty and pain. We say this with emphasis because it is out of the question that a pupil can continue to exist in two fields. At present, you are in a phase of transition. You participate in two worlds. You are of this nature, and, as a pupil, of the new life. But this is an impossible state of affairs that can be only very temporary. That is why a choice is necessary. As soon as we have made this choice as a group, the school will experience a wonderful development. Then we will not progress at the rate we know so very well from the years before 1953, but we will fly forward with the speed of an airplane. Then the progress of the school will break out over us as a wonder. For this reason, a choice is absolutely necessary. The Sermon on the Mount states very clearly that we have to choose between God and Mammon. Mammon is often seen as the god of money, and to a certain extent that is right. But that is not the most profound meaning of the Sermon on the Mount. By Mammon, you should understand everything that is of this world, hence the choice between God and this world. The problems of the soul which prevent a choice and its smooth realization lie principally in the form of self-maintenance of every description. You think you are prevented from choosing on account of all your dialectical difficulties. You think that you are not in a position to do anything right, as you have already succumbed to so many obstacles of ordinary nature. But we say to you, remember the evangelical expression, "Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Leave your dialectical difficulties for what they are. Do not try to disentangle them. For with every knot you disentangle, you perhaps fasten two others' knots even more strongly. Nobody on the horizontal level has ever found a solution to the tangle, a way out of the labyrinth of ordinary nature. The deeper you enter the maze of life, the more new passages, the more new doors you will meet. And behind each door, another labyrinth will be found. There is no liberation from this. Leave your difficulties for what they are and lose yourself. Take leave of yourself and of your difficulties. You will get rid of all your difficulties and miseries if only you let go of yourself. A conscious neutralization is demanded. The ancient Gnostics called it self-mortification, the endurer. In the Gospel of Truth of Valentinus, all this is clearly explained. The myth of Noah's Ark, too, draws attention to this. Moreover, it stresses the fact that of all the wild beasts, one pair was taken into the ark. This is often laughed at, but we should understand the intention of all of this. Such stories and customs symbolize the knowledge and experience of the initiates of all times. In the new field of life, where the sevenfold spirit reveals itself, all provisions for the new race are present in the magnetic body for practical application. Everything you need, everything you might possibly desire, is present in the sevenfold spirit. All of this means that you must put aside your psychological buts and be filled with inner joy, which rises out of a growing insight and a changing life. If only you will clearly see what it is all about. Away with your fears. If you continue to cling to your reservations, it points to fear and to eye centrality, and also to love of all the old things. If you truly seek the new kingdom, accepting all the consequences, all problems will fit into their places. Perhaps now we still see in a mirror, darkly, but then we will see face to face. With this, we have prepared ourselves for the following discussion. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, "For now we see in a mirror darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall understand fully, even as I have been fully understood. So faith, hope, and love abide, but the greatest of these is love." The centers of our consciousness, our intelligence, our willing and thinking and desiring are located at the top of the head sanctuary. Now think of the long past of our microcosm. How many residents has the microcosm known? Without number. Well, the sum of this past lies enclosed in the sacral plexus at the lower end of the backbone. There lies the coiled snake of the Kundalini, which connects us with the karmic past. Between the coiled snake of the past and our intelligence organs lies the channel of the serpent fire. When we think of the gnosis of the school, of its magnetic body and its task, and of the salvation that has been presented to us, then in fact we look darkly into a mirror. It is true that laboriously, in view of what is said in the school and thanks to the touch of the inner light, we understand something. Yet we still lack the fullness of insight. We possess only the dark mirror, the consciousness that is still completely closed in its highest aspect. Its center is under the grip of the coiled snake of the Kundalini, the concentrated past in us. In such darkness, all kinds of ambiguities, fears, and doubts steal about in the soul. When we say, "Banish the fear that is in you," we do not in any way deny its reality, and we certainly do not underestimate it. Indeed, it is existentially present. But if you want to put an end to such soul distress and be able to know fully and see face to face, then you should realize that there are three steps to be climbed. We respect everyone who clearly shows the doubts and fears of the soul, and even talks about them, provided such a one also climbs those three steps. But if you positively refuse to mount the three steps that are carved out and held open for you in love while talking about the fears of your soul, then we have no respect for you, because then you are foolish. If you fall into water and you cannot get out alone because of the boggy bank, and we extend a helping hand saying, "Let us pull you out," and you do not grasp our hand but continue to lament, what can we do for you then? There are three steps that lead to the aim. The first is unconditional faith, as a proof that you have heard the call of the Gnosis and that this call vibrates in your soul. You have come to the school for this reason, and you will be faithful to the call that has awakened you. That is faith. Faith is not a stupid acceptance of what is decreed from above, but principally an understanding through the inner touch of the light, by which the pupil says, I will go, I will join. At present, I only see in a mirror darkly, but I have experienced the call, I am coming. This is what is meant by climbing the first step. At this stage, glimpses of light come through the state of faith, for instance, at a service, so that you see the promised land as from a distance. Then a wave of joy and enthusiasm spreads through the soul, and for a moment you are out of the dark. But as your state of consciousness has not yet been fundamentally modified, such a situation of enlightenment cannot last. Everything will change into its opposite as soon as you are absorbed again by the things of ordinary nature. However, if only you persevere, the second step can be mounted. If faith, notwithstanding the still unavoidable ups and downs, appears to be strong, you mount the step of hope. The first ray of the Holy Spirit, the ray of the faculty, will dwell in your soul. The Gnostic power will enter your being via the sternum, the rose and the thymus, the blood and the automatic nervous system. The new light then shines and rises to the tower room via the medulla oblongata, which is connected with the heart. There, it ignites the fourth candelabrum in the fourth brain cavity. When the fourth candlestick is ignited, the light of hope glimmers in the soul. In the tower room, in the fourth brain cavity, the pituitary gland is located. This gland has two very important parts, an anterior lobe and a posterior lobe. The anterior lobe connects us directly with the thinking faculty in the head, with the sensory organs, and with the Gnostic impulses. The touch of the Holy Spirit is transferred through it to the thinking, willing, and sensory organs. That is why hope is more than faith, as is stated in the Bible. The Gnostic radiations enter the pupil via the sternum system. They rise up to the fourth candlestick, and there they stir the pituitary gland. Via the anterior lobe of this gland, the rays of light that burn in the fourth candlestick gradually penetrate to the top of the head sanctuary. That is why hope is more than faith. It is a foreshadowing light that brings the soul into a new situation. Consequently, a hopeful man, also in the spiritual school, is entirely different than a faithful one. The man of faith can think the man of hope is a great optimist, but he who stands in hope is not a superficial optimist, but a cheerful, and to a certain extent, a radiating man. Cheerfulness radiates out of the eyes of such a person, for he has courage, he is equal to his task. In the light of hope, he sees the things of the new state of life clearer than ever before. That is why in the Bible, hope is compared with a helmet, a protection for the head sanctuary that grows from the light of the Spirit. Faith is from the force field, but hope begins to glimmer through the first ray of the Holy Spirit, the first ray of the sevenfold power. In faith, we see the things of the new life as from afar. In hope, we experience the nearness of the new life. It is logical that the third step is love. Love means to become one, an absolute unity. In our sense, love is the unity with the Gnosis as the second ray of the sevenfold spirit. In faith, a bond already exists, and those who die in faith experience the grace of it in the vacuum of Shambhala. In hope, the bond with the Gnosis becomes closer, and in love, it becomes an accomplished fact. The pupil experiences, via the fourth candlestick, how the Gnostic plenitude of the second ray occupies the head sanctuary. The magnetic tie with dialectics is positively severed, and the heart and the head are born into a complete unity in the Gnosis. Love in this sense revealing itself in a definitely recovered head-heart unity, with all its breathtaking consequences, is truly the birth of the light of God, the resurrection of Christ in man.